This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, Rog, it's the Men in Blazers podcast. It's an international break special.
Special.
The best of times and the worst of times, Davey.
Why, Rog?
Well, you went on a little tennis break.
I went to see the Men's Open final at the US Open last night. Actually, you know, it's the first time I've ever been to a Grand Slam final, Rog. Croatia versus Japan. I was stunned they didn't play the Japanese national anthem.
It's the only reason you went.
I know, I was very upset about that. But poor Nishikori, I'm sure he felt terribly embarrassed last night.
He felt a bit Shinji Kagawa.
Yeah, he let his nation down. And Croatia, Cilic, there he goes. The greatest palindrome in sport, Rog, cruises to a win. 6-3, 6-3, 6-3, as I rather meanly tweeted, and I apologise. Chelsea Everton.
Still feel the pain, Dave, and I felt a lot of pain this weekend.
Because it's an international break. You don't like an international break, Rog.
I feel lonely.
Yeah.
I feel bereft.
Yeah.
I just sat there in my underpants on the couch, just casually flicking through the channels, desperate to try and find the two wobbies on the replay. I ended up watching Lazy Town instead, yeah. Which made me feel bizarrely close to football.
Does it feel like this international break came earlier than it did last year and lasted longer?
It felt devastating.
Yeah.
Honestly. It was a footballing famine, of which we will talk about. But yeah. But the English papers start to fill up with lots of bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
When there is no football to talk about.
Oh, well, Prince William and Kate, congratulations. They announced they're expecting a second royal baby, Rog. And what a great timing to announce it during the Premier League international break so that people actually pay attention to it, Rog.
Yeah, I don't. You do. You're quite excited, I bet.
I was very excited about George, named after my son, George. I love an heir to the throne, a direct heir. Of course, this one will become, first, second, fourth in line to the throne, but unlikely to become king or queen, one would say. But you know what? Generally, unlike you, I like the royal family, and particularly these two princes, Rog, William and Harry, who've had the guts to do something.
Harry the half-brother.
They've had the guts to do something that neither of us have ever done, which is serve their country, active service in the military, and I really respect them for it.
You know, I have never forgiven the royal family.
For?
Well, the Queen came to Liverpool in 1977, a silver jubilee year.
Oh, I love the silver jubilee.
And we all lined up, we lined up for 12 hours to see her drive past at 70 miles an hour in a Land Rover.
So it's all about you.
She shot past us faster than Andros Townsend.
He's not as fast as he was.
I've never forgiven it for that. The Queen, they're dead to me at that point.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting.
Yeah.
Like the naming strategy of any baby, particularly a royal baby, on which there's so much kind of the symbolism and heaviness that's placed. For me, like when we had kids, the naming strategy, I'd always open up with my wife.
Yeah.
Just like opening up with a wild gambit as if it was a negotiation strategy.
Okay.
And I always had a list, like Grincha was always the first name that I insisted on, named after the 1950s and 60s lost legend Brazilian footballer who on the first page of his biography, it's described how he lost his virginity at the age of 12 to a goat. So that is why I open with Hector. I'm always fascinated by the kind of the Greek mythology of Hector. My wife finds that slightly less fascinating. And I always insisted we name a kid Primo after Primo Levi, the great kind of chemist, Italian Holocaust writer who never really recovered from the Holocaust. She'd turn them all down and then we'd negotiate inwards from that.
But I've met Mrs. B and I've seen the dynamic that exists between Mrs. B. And I find it difficult to believe that you had any influence whatsoever over the name of your children or that any of your negotiating tactics have ever worked.
You'd be surprised. My fourth child is called Primo. That was her way of saying, we're done. You've got your way. Name's quite important. So I'm trying to think what
there's
royals
no
are
way she would have named that child Primo if she didn't love the name.
Well, we actually had a very interesting debate. Primo Levi sadly committed suicide.
Yeah.
And she said she wouldn't name a child after him because of that. And I found a paper written by an academic in East Lancashire, Polytechnic, who wrote a paper called Primo Levi Suicide.
Can we just say something? An academic in East Lancashire Polytechnic. That's brilliant.
Yeah, he wrote a paper called Primo Levi.
Yeah.
Suicide, dot, 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 or vertigo.
Oh.
Because he felt from that he...
Probably vertigo.
No doubt vertigo. And as soon as that paper, which was written by a reputable academic, was located, it's our fourth child's name, Primo.
Well, I named my son George. It's a great... I believe that I live within the English tradition that you name your first son...
After George Michael.
After a king. After the sports machine. Totally about the sports machine. But you name him after a king. So there's not a lot of... Ethelred would have been a good
who's
thing.
My favourite? Ethelred the Unready.
Ethelred the Unready.
Here's what I think is on their shortlist.
Okay.
They could go... If you are Prince William and what's her name?
Kate.
Kate. You can go... There's a couple of ways to go.
What's the Duchess of Cambridge?
I no, couldn't care less. You could go populist.
Yeah.
Trying to get re-engage the people.
Yeah.
Like, a bit like England Football Club.
Like Raheem.
He's on the list.
Yeah.
Lee.
Yeah.
Or Wayne. Wazza.
Yeah.
Wazza Windsor.
Yeah. Wazza Windsor.
Great name.
I'm a man of the people. Just Wayne Windsor would be really good. Okay. What else?
You could try and reignite the special relationship, quote, between the US and England by pandering to Americans.
Yeah.
With something really American, like Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
I like that name.
Or Barack.
Tirico.
Tirico is a great name. Tirico Windsor.
Or Haha.
At Clinton Dix.
No win. Haha Windsor, David.
Wow, there you go.
Or you could go something. They're normally quite political, these namings.
Yeah.
So they could try and reconnect to Scotland.
Aye. Well, Scotland, by the way, about to have their vote for independence, Rog. The polls have just said that the yes vote is now running neck and neck with the no vote.
Yeah.
This means that Scotland might be going independent.
It's amazing. They could call the baby Naismith. Naismith Windsor.
Yeah, good name.
And pander to the unruly Scots beyond the wall by picking a wilding name.
I think Jock would be good. Jock Windsor would be great.
Money bets on that now, Davey.
Yeah, we will see, Rog. We've got a packed show. We're going to marvel at the United States' historic victory in Prague.
That you've already forgotten about.
Oh, we're going to read way too much into international friendlies, Rog. We're going to sully ourselves by feigning excitement about Euro 2016 qualifying. It seems that every team, pretty much except for Gibraltar, who is entering the qualifying tournament, is going to qualify.
It's like the hockey
for
playoffs.
Euro 2016. I know, it's crazy. We're going to fix the English national team, Rog.
Let's fix them.
Oh, my God. What are we going to do that in the last 5 minutes? We're going to discuss all the latest Premier League tittle-tattle. We're going to covet your Ravens and welcome Fault in Our Stars author. God, I'm still getting over watching that on the plane, Rog. John Green, big Liverpool fan. We're going to welcome him back to the pod.
Fault in Our Stars is what they called the DVD of Manchester United's last season.
Pretty much.
David Moyes.
Pretty much. Okay, Rog, to the football. Time to open the Guinness. Okay, here we go. You know, the international break hits some people harder than others. I quite like international football. I don't like a break from the Premier League, but I do love watching international football, Rog. But it seemed to hit you pretty hard. I was actually worried about you this weekend.
Yep.
Again.
You should have been.
The second weekend in a row.
You should have been.
Yeah.
I missed the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like the deserts miss the rain,
oh,
David.
I love that song.
I mean, it did. We heard from a lot of you who I think old fans and increasingly new who've just kind of connected to football and then were suddenly like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Just when the NFL comes back, all the new American fans who've just been turned onto the sport, they didn't know what had hit them. The weekend it felt to me, how can I describe what it felt like? It felt like the endless wait that we're all experiencing, having like for George R.R. Martin to hurry up and finish the sixth Game of Thrones book. It didn't feel like 2 or 3 days of non-football weekend, Davey. I was so soccer starved. I started to watch the FIBA World Cup. I mean, I'd normally take pleasure from cheering for Angola, but we got some great tweets at Myman71. Just getting into the EPL, and they hit me with an international break. WTF? At Tooch says on Saturday he tweeted this one at Men in Blazers. Can I still have a beer this morning?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
You feel
we
like
got that one.
FIFA and UEFA. They probably love the fact that just as the Premier League, just as the domestic leagues are getting going and they're dominating football conversation, they love the fact that all of that is done. They get to put their blazers and official ties on and they get to go and interrupt the narrative of the Premier League.
And prove to us that without the Premier League, we're all just daytime drinkers and a pie is just horse meat, Dave. Everything seems to lose its magic to me. But we did have some methadone.
That's an appropriate reference in the crap part of Soho.
We did. We had thanks to, and you and I try not to read too much into friendlies.
Yeah, US go behind enemy lines, Rog. They beat the Czech Republic in Prague. I think that's a good result. I think it's a good result. And the cacophony, Rog, of mediocre football that is Euro 2016 qualifying kicked off. But first, let's get in the George Michael sports machine, Rog. And let's go to the General Arena in Prague. Chikow! Czech Republic 0, the United States men's national team 1. The US kicks off a new World Cup cycle, defeats the Czech Republic behind a 39th minute goal from Alejandro Bedoya. Had a good game, Rog. With one eye on Moscow, Jurgen Klinsmann trotted out a young Von Trapp side, starting only two players who were in the first 11 against Belgium, Rog.
Oh, I love a new cycle, David.
Yeah, oh, it's a new cycle.
I love the start, a new beginning.
Yeah.
It's like the first game of a World Cup cycle. Mm-hmm. It's like I always think of a tiny kind of freshwater stream just baubling in the mountains.
Yeah.
Knowing that those same little drops that seem so innocent and lacking in any kind of meaning can contribute to a thrusting kind of current pulsating river that thrusts out to the sea come World Cup time.
So let's do this, Rog. Can I ask you to do something? Let's draw a blank page after this amazing World Cup we just had and this performance by the US men's national team that captured the imagination of a nation. What are you looking... As we go into the next cycle, what is it that you're looking for? What are you looking to see from this new cycle US men's national team under Jurgen?
I think a team who come Moscow.
Yeah.
2018.
Yeah.
Believe when they take the field against the Belgium, against the France.
Yeah.
Against the Uruguay.
Yeah.
Against an Argentina. Feel that they do not have a cat in hell's chance, but they can actually take on their opponents and grapple with them and give them a real game.
Yeah. That match them position for position.
I mean, that's the next phase. And not man for man, because I think there is a talent gap.
Yeah.
But you see with the Costa Ricas, you see with Uruguay, tiny nations where they have cohesive, confident players who take the field without a question mark. Are we going to play? And I think, Jurgen said that in kind of two... And if you speak to footballers of the kind of Casey Keller era, they will say when it came to the World Cup, in the early 1990s, they would take the field against the big teams and try and minimise the defeat.
Yeah.
And come the 2000s, they kind of believed that they belonged.
Yeah.
And the next phase will be a team who believes that they can take on all comers and win. I think that's what we're looking for.
I guess for me, I'm looking for a step beyond that, because I actually think that belief, self-belief, confidence, playing for the shirt, the sort of the team ethos... I think the US overachieve in that category, and I don't believe that they're ever going to get any worse. I think those are just natural American characteristics. I'm looking for the emergence of a key player, a playmaker, a world-class player. I think that's what we've got to find in the US, because ultimately, however much you play for the shirt, however much you believe, however much passion you've got to win against the best teams in the world, technically. And Jurgen has set out his stall, Rog. He's set out his stall. Semi-finals in 2018. That's where he wants to go. This is our goal going towards Russia. Not to stop at the round of 16. Maybe not to stop at the quarterfinal, Fabian. To say clearly, listen, we have 4 years to prepare this cycle. Our goal is going into a semi-final in a World Cup, Rog.
Yeah. That took all the headlines. I did find it quite interesting. There was an outcry ahead of the last World Cup.
Yeah.
When Jurgen said the US had no chance of winning it.
Yeah.
This time, I love how excited people are getting about the
bold
prediction.
Because he said we're going to finish third or fourth.
Yeah, but he's essentially said the same thing. We're not going to win it. We're going to get to the semi-final. A semi-final, I'm in two minds.
Yeah.
We've been there before, 1930.
Yeah.
It's going to be like 1930 all over again, David.
Yeah. We don't talk about that enough.
And that semi-final appearance hardly kicked on the sport in this country.
Yeah.
But then my second impulse is, why so low? Why is he aiming so low, David? Is he trying to manage our expectations by saying we're going to get knocked out in the semi-final? We're going to win it all.
Yeah, I think it's an odd prediction. You and I have spoken about this a lot. I think it's an odd prediction because it's so close to saying we're going to win it, or that's the aim, that's the goal. But it's also so random. You know that the reality of the World Cup is once you get into the last 16, these are single elimination games in neutral sites, often with terrible refereeing, strange decisions. Who knows what the injuries are? It's just very difficult to predict. Yes, you can predict that Germany, Brazil, old Brazil, Argentina, Holland are always going to be there or thereabouts, but very tough to predict further than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a battle cry, and I think he's trying to say, this time round, I'm raising the bar. This time round, it's my World Cup. This time round, I have the absolute, complete, full cycle, and it's going to be all on me, and we're going to march forward. But when you talk about the finding of a true playmaker, it's what was fascinating about this game. I mean, really, it was a motley crew of kind of European-American youth.
Yeah,
it was the little rascals. They looked experienced in comparison, and it was like, what's the number for 911? The star of the performance for me, or the one that we kind of knew about and wanted to see how he'd perform, was Mick Discrew.
Yeah, I thought he had a great game.
Yeah, I mean, he looks even more handsome to me now than he did in the World Cup, in which he didn't play a minute. He looks ever more like a Harlequin romance novel kind of guy. I imagine it's the book set in a hospital ward. He's the young doctor. He nurses an incurably sick patient back to full health while getting to first base with a whole load of nurses. The other guy I like was Emerson Hinderman of Dallas, Texas, and Fulham. Guy who seems to be benefiting from the complete lack of space and the physical play that he's enduring in the championship. You enjoyed the goalkeeper battle royale.
You know, you make so many assumptions in football. It's dangerous to do so. Tim Howard taking a sabbatical for a year. Oh, of course, Brad Guzan's going to step right in and he's going to take that position. He's going to be the US men's national team's next goalie. Nick Romando had an outstanding game in goal. And I think we've all learned, for club and country, what really makes goalkeepers perform is competition for that position. And I think that was a great thing for the US, that Nick Romando stepped in, had such an authoritative, fantastic game of football. I like, he's my kind of goalkeeper.
A gentleman,
Roger,
that looks like he could stop a bullet my if it was fired.
My kind of goalkeeper.
I loved the sad thing for Brad Guzan, who has paid his dues at Aston Villa. He had to wait forever to step in and be the number one.
And he is a great keeper, I should say. This isn't a knock against Brad Guzan.
Phenomenal goalkeeper. He almost paid the price in this game for starting with the first string.
Yeah.
And then Nick Romando got to play with the second string in the second half, where everything had gone to crap. And there's just shots on goal raining.
Yet another really good win for the United States in a sort of, you know, moderately good European country with some very good players.
Don't know if I can wait four more years, Dave. I do not know if I can wait four more years. At Thomas340B tweeted us at Men in Blazers, do you know if the winner of the 2018 World Cup gets annexed into Russia?
Wow.
We've got a couple of years to find out.
Dark, dark, dark. Rog, well, on to England. Two wins, one against Norway in front of just 40,000 fans. This really, whatever happened on the field, the storyline of this game was how few people turned up at Wembley to go and watch that game.
I think the Portland Thorns get bigger crowds.
Yeah, that's the fewest ever for an England game at the new Wembley, Rog. And a 2-0 victory against a sloppy Switzerland. Frankly, I think England could have scored more. I think it was a pretty good victory. That gave Roy Hodgson some breathing space in which to pull some of the knives out of his back dispensed there by the many England critics. Did you see the game? Did you think? Why don't you start, and then I'll say what I think.
I'd like to say congratulations, England, for qualifying for Euro 2016.
Well, we should say, when you sent out that tweet, I wonder how many people actually truly understood what you were saying there. Part of that reference was, I'm sure, to the overreaction that a lot of England critics and England fans will have, as though they just won something because they won a game in Switzerland. But really, it's because of the ridiculous expansion of Euro 2016, which is going from 16 teams to 24 teams. And it means that so many, about half of the teams in qualification, are going to qualify. Two teams in every group, plus a playoff for the teams that finish third. There's almost no pressure on these qualifiers. And certainly now that England have got a win against Switzerland, one would think the best team in the group, it would seem impossible for them not to qualify for this tournament. Now it's almost taken the pressure off qualification. Yeah, maybe that's why England were better.
In that they've beaten the best team in their group on the road. I mean, I'd say also it was lovely to watch a game which was clearly retribution for a loss to the Swiss in the War of the Second Coalition in 1799.
Well, I mean, everybody knows that.
And the War of the Fourth Coalition in 1807. Uh-huh. What fascinates me about this England team, Davo, is just the crisis of confidence, the crisis of brand, the crisis of culture that kind of surrounds the England national team. I mean, Roy Hodgson, before the Norway game, this is a Norwegian team who were below Armenia, Sierra Leone, Uzbekistan, and even bloody Scotland in the world rankings. He talked about how hard it was going to be to win the game. He warned that we weren't going to go out and thrash them. I mean, not since, I guess, Rob Kardashian ever seen anyone on television who's so convinced of their own doom. He talks about how people aren't ever going to come to Wembley again. We're not exciting to the public. We're going to be playing San Marino, Estonia, Slovenia, Lithuania. And then they labour to the 1-0 win against Norway. And he is torn apart, finally. A little bit of a hangover from the World Cup. But England had two shots on target. He came out with some amazing quotes. When he was asked about the two shots on target, he said, "Don't you hit me with statistics." And when the English press kept pushing them, he said, "You keep telling me we only had two shots on goal, but please don't keep saying it, because for me it's absolutely effing bollocks. I'm sorry."
Well, I think the one thing I'd say in Roy's defence there is that the English media are ridiculous. And if he followed the advice of the English media, Christ knows where we'd be with our football team. And actually, I think Roy had a good weekend. I think he had a good weekend. He had a good international break. And I think what he found in the performance against Switzerland is a potential future. Yes, let's face it, we were better than Switzerland. Hooray, hurrah, we're better than Switzerland. Switzerland are the ninth-ranked team in world football. That makes us like a top 10 ranked team in world football. That's sort of about England's level, which is sort of where England have been pretty consistently for the last 20 years in world football. There were some signs of hope in this team, and the signs of hope are based on young players who really, really worked with each other for the team. I thought Fabian Delph, Rog, had a very shaky start, but I thought he was just fantastic. I thought Henderson had a great game in midfield, even though he picked up an injury. Sterling and Welbeck, I got to say, he spawned a couple of chances to set up goals early on. But what I like about Welbeck, and what I think what Arsenal fans are really going to love about him, is how hard Welbeck works to retain the ball, to win the ball in midfield, to set themselves up. And that
when he scored, seeing Roy Hodgson's little jump into the air and his little fist pump,
I found that depressing.
I loved that. Depressing. That was, to me, it was like those old cartoons, happiness is. It was like watching a little seal. That was how cute it was to me.
I find the only thing I find more depressing than the look on Roy's face when England failed to convert an opportunity is the look on Roy's face when they actually convert one. I find it doesn't have any of the joy of Herrera. It doesn't have any of the love of life, none of that confidence. I actually think he
but there's so much cruel hatred now of Roy. To me, it's like bear baiting. To me, it's like laughing at Howard Beale. And I find it fascinating, the Swiss game, how much the Swiss love Roy Hodgson. He used to be their manager. They adore him. They admire him. They think he created a revolution in Swiss football. Swiss football has now got a lot of youth, a lot of invention. They tie it all back to his kind of tactical invention as the Swiss manager. The other English thing I find slightly depressing, David, I find this depressing in life, not just in football, is Wayne Rooney. I mean, the English press asked him what he'll bring to his role as captain.
Yeah.
And he said, "I'll bring myself." What an answer. Really? I thought about that a lot over the past week. The Norwegian papers called him Captain Fatso.
I got to tell you, there's something happened last week that has made me really, really love Wayne Rooney.
Go on.
The Instagram picture of his son on his first day of school in his school uniform.
Kai.
There's something about that picture that has literally made me fall in love with the man in the way that I've never
been in love before.
It's the school uniform that we all wore, that striped blazer, the little shorts, the knees poking out, the long socks, the black shoes, that little sweat, the white shirt, the tie done up with the stripes, and the little sweater with the sort of school colours around the V of the neck. And it's just an amazing picture. And it just was the normalcy of Wayne Rooney, his upward mobility, and sort of where he is and where his family is right now. I just loved it. I loved every single
Someone who had to wear shorts to school with a cap until the age of 13. I hated seeing it. Gave me the chills.
You know,
feel for him. I mean, the captain's armband is possibly the worst gift to be bestowed upon him since that mother brought her son a good guy doll in Chucky. He's so unfortunate, his timing. He's been elevated to captain on two teams that are imploding around him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like Coleridge's, the albatross and the ancient mariner. Instead of the cross, the albatross around my neck was hung. I feel terrible for that gentleman.
You have to be careful, though, Rog. Joey Barton wrote something. This is, I'm amazed I'm about to say this. But Joey Barton wrote something on Twitter this weekend. I'm sure it's not his line. But he wrote, there is no absolute truth in football. And it was, I think he was saying something very flattering about Jack Wilshere, and Arsenal fans or some anti-Arsenal people got crazy about him and what he was writing. And he wrote, you know, guys, there is no absolute truth in football. It's not like Wilshere is world class or Wilshere is shit. It's like there is a lot of middle ground. The games have to be played. Things have to happen. And I think that Wayne Rooney's story is to pick the side of the narrative. Oh, it's done. Wayne Rooney is doomed. It's all over for him at Man United. All over for him. Now he's got the armband. There's no absolute truth. I think the Wayne Rooney story, the Wayne Rooney saga, is still going to be written. Thank God for us. There are still going to be ups and downs. And I'm just talking about his hair, Rog. I'm not even talking about his football.
By the way, talking about amazing international team, Scotland. I love watching that.
Oh, that performance. So
no
American.
No fear. No negativity. Germany. The most American team in soccer, Scotland. By the way, God, let them get into Euro 2016. So few teams have amazing fans, like Scottish football fans. Maybe
that's
I'll start
be a
cheering
tough,
for those
That's going to be a tough group, Rog. It's going to be a tough group.
England will qualify. I mean, they're playing a bunch of
lumps. Already have qualified.
Slovenia, Lithuania, Estonia, San Marino.
Yeah.
The country doesn't care. Things have gotten so bad. England have hired a marketing agency.
Ugh.
The worst thing they could do to create a campaign to, quote, win the public over once more.
Do you know what? Play good football.
Well, we're going to fix it for you. We're going to save you the money. The head of marketing for the FA, a man called Russell James, said to the press, the aim of our Together for England campaign, the worst, is to revive fans' belief. Revive fans' belief. This is amazing. By demonstrating passion and pride, in brackets, through marketing. You can't do it through marketing. You were saying.
You do it through football. Do it through football. Do it through goals like that first, that beautiful, as I think it was, not Henry Winter, I think it was Dickinson from the Times wrote that it was the kind of counter-attacking goal that Jose Mourinho would have been proud of, that goal. It was a fantastic, fantastic goal. That's how you've got to bring people back, by that incisive, fast play. Great goal.
I couldn't agree. I mean, I was trying to jot down how I think you can save English football, English national football team. Here's my point.
English players with foreign names. Is that on there?
That's yours. Oh. Number one. You patented that.
Oh, Fabian Delph. Rolando Ahrens playing for the under-21s, Rog, was amazing.
And Lallana coming back.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, I think the step one, they need a nadir. They need to bottom out.
Yeah.
And I think we're quite close to bottoming
out. We didn't do that in Brazil.
We need to hit,
that wasn't the bottom.
We need to hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Number two, we need to wipe the disc completely clean. In the Bible, the Israelites had to wander around the desert for 40 years because the plan was to make sure there was nobody who remembered slavery still alive when they became a nation.
Uh-huh.
And I think to the same degree, we need to clean the system of any players who were involved in the 2006 World Cup. Get rid of them all. They've all gone in Rio, Lamps.
Yeah.
That generation who just had shattered high hopes and shattered dreams.
Yeah.
The ones Joey Barton, if you're quoting him, his best quote ever was when he summed up the 2006 World Cup campaign as, I played here's my book. They all came out. Each one of them came out with...
The wisdom of Joey Barton.
And then number three, you revive your nation hopes. You've hit it already. With Raheem Sterling, with Daniel Sturridge, with Danny Welbeck, a team who will run at opponents fearlessly with speed. Number four, Dave, and it does bother me about Wayne Rooney because I see other international teams that have turned their culture around.
Yeah.
And the captain has played a kid. Look at Belgium, who are a joke, an underachieving joke for years and years and years. And when you talk about their resurgence, it's Vincent Kompany stepping in, healing rifts, being an inspirational leader and showing just how much it meant for him, thus the rest of his squad, to play for Belgium. Someone who loves playing for England. When you think of Wayne Rooney, do you think of a man who loves playing for England?
Do you know, I actually do. I think Wayne Rooney and I think his I think his quotes reflect that he it means a lot for him putting on the shirt. And he's had some amazing performances for England. He's got a decline of his footballing skills. He's getting older, Rog. He's definitely got a decline in his skills. But I think he's found a way to contribute. And I think within this system and surrounded by these young guys, he's surrounded by... Sturridge wasn't even playing, Rog. Some say that's a good thing because Sturridge is too much of an individual to fit into this team system. But I think that he can do okay. He's declining his skills. You know, the other thing I'd say, by the way, about this game with the sort of the which sort of went counter narrative is Joe Hart had an outstanding game of football. It could be because he's being challenged by Fraser Forster now, all of a sudden, who's got off to a good start at Southampton.
The English Nick Romando.
Yeah, the English Nick Romando. But yeah, I think Rooney likes putting on the English shirt. I just think he's not a captain in the tradition of what we have in our mind that an England captain is, a Brian Robson, a David Beckham, a John Terry even. He's not that kind of a vocal leader.
I'll be myself. Number five, defanging of the tabloid media and their crazy mood swings.
Ugh. Yeah.
Which you don't have in this country, the US. And they do. It is vinegar into wounds for the national psyche.
Hence we have to have a marketing department at Team England, a publicist who gives the manager and the players talking points before they go and speak to the people, rather than just letting the football do the talking.
That's the culture and organisation that's less about marketing and a press angle. I mean, in Brazil, they found a training ground that had the most picturesque backdrop for photo shoots, for the kind of press photos, rather than the one that would allow the players to actually prepare in the most methodical way. I mean, essentially, we need a culture where the gents look forward to coming together, making the nation proud, playing for England. When you talked about Uruguay, you looked at the commentators kept saying they are playing for the people back home in Montevideo. We need to refine that kind of pleasure within our national team culture.
And I think some of that comes from, it's an interesting mix, this England squad right now, between these players, a lot of players from Liverpool, players from United, you know, definitely sort of, you know, Cahill coming from Chelsea, a couple of players from Man City. Well, certainly Milner from Man City, Joe Hart from Man City. But I actually like the emergence of these players coming from the smaller teams. I think that's great to see Fabian Delph going to play for England. I think it was great to see John Stones emerging. And I thought John Stones had a great game.
Some of the bigger, smaller teams.
A fantastic, fantastic game that John Stones had. And I think we've got some real competition for places now. And I think it's a good thing. So even though I think the overall standard has declined and there aren't those star players, I think actually what taking those huge stars out of it means that there's competition all over the park for places. And you've got some young players coming in and starting to challenge. We should also say that England had victories in almost every age group this weekend. 21s, 20s, 19s, 18s. And some of these performances by some of these emerging Premier League stars. Rolando Arons, just fine tape of that game. He was outstanding. This is an electrifying player coming onto the scene with a foreign name.
Could be worse, Dave.
Yeah.
We could be Portuguese.
Yeah.
1-0 home loss to Albania.
Okay, Roger, anything else on the international break?
Yeah, one of the pleasures of the weekend.
Which one was that?
Watching Gibraltar.
Oh, my God. This is like the Men in Blazers national team, Rog. Well, these are just firemen and insurance clerks and accountants.
It's funny you mention that.
Lacing it up against Poland.
Arguably one of the greatest vassals of the what's left of the British Empire.
Yeah.
30,000 people.
On that rock.
On a rock.
Yeah.
Just most Americans have emailed us saying, what is this thing called Gibraltar?
It's a rock.
It's right by Spain.
Yeah.
It annoys the Spanish.
Yeah, it's the best team in the Iberian Peninsula.
And so England have kind of kept it on because it annoys the Spanish.
Yeah.
And they've just been accepted by UEFA.
Uh-huh.
And they fielded against Poland
a
starting 11 that boasted two policemen, three brothers, a winger who is an electrician, a goalkeeper who's a fireman, a holding midfielder who's a cop, and a striker, my favourite possibly, who is a shipping agent.
Yeah.
A shipping agent. That sounds like a mediocre Le Carre novel.
That's a big job in Gibraltar.
I love it, Dave. It reminds me, first of all, of football back in the 1880s when it was last really good, when Liverpool really was a team of 11 Liverpudlians, a romantic time when the goalie was the town butcher and the town dog catcher would play up front. Amazing.
Oh, it's amazing, the dog catcher.
And then it reminded me of the Men in Blazers national team.
No, we never got that together, Ross. Well, we were going to go and play Lake Norian.
We were going to play San Marino.
Oh, really?
We kept faxing San Marino.
I know.
The FA, but they would not reply to us. This was a... This
Maybe
was our
we should
idea.
Fax Gibraltar.
Well, that's what I think. We had an idea last season
when
we heard about the San Marino 11 And we wanted to get our best listeners. If you're a plumber, if you're a baker, an undertaker, a student, if you work behind the bar, if you're a good footballer, last year we got you to email us and tell us your qualifications. I'm going to start faxing this afternoon, Dave. I'm going to fax the Gibraltar Football Association. I'm going to challenge them to a game.
Yeah.
And we're going to get the band back together. Yeah. We're going to get the Men in Blazers national team.
Are we going to go position an occupation? Position and occupation against each position and occupation, meaning if they've got a fireman, if they've got a cop in holding midfield, are we going to put our best cop against that cop?
Yes.
Are we going to put our town rat catcher against their rat catcher?
Their shipping
our shipping agent against their shipping agent. That's what we should do.
We need as many applicants as possible. We will have trials in New York City. I'm looking at a field out the window just on the Hudson River. Yeah. We're going to have trials here in New York City. Email us. Yeah. If you want to be part.
Or send us a raven.
Send us a raven.
Meninblazers@gmail.com, crap part of Soho.
I'm only doing this so that we can design a Men in Blazers national team jersey, David.
It would be tight. Okay, Rog. Let's move on. Back to the Premier League.
What's really important.
It's back this weekend. We're so excited.
Tingling, David.
I feel like I've forgotten a little bit about the Premier League. The international break has erased. FIFA have gone in and they've tried to erase part of our collective Premier League memory so that it's all about them.
Well,
it's
we
all
do
about
what
Seth.
We they do on Law and Order, David.
Which is what?
In case you missed last week's Law and Order. Dun, dun,
dun, they, or whatever it is.
Do a little recap.
Dun, 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 dun. Is that Law and Order? I can't
what
remember.
What are the five
burning questions, Rog, that everyone in the football world, everyone is talking about right now. Question one, will the three-man back line, the last-minute transfer window splurges, and a propensity to talk in the third person empower Louis van Gaal to foster cultural change at Man U. I mean, they have spent a lot of money, Rog.
They have, but let's remember when we last saw them.
Yeah.
Plucky, little United failed to win any of their opening four games.
Yeah.
And the campaign has already included a humiliating 4-0 loss to the MK Dons in the Capital One Cupity Cup.
Cupity Cup, Cup, Cup.
You know, when I came to America for the first time, when I was 15, I was in Chicago, and I just took everything, every cup from Arby's I saved, every newspaper I saved, every White Sox ticket I saved. And when I was trying to pack on the way home into my little formal English suitcase, the dad who I was staying with in Northbrook, Illinois, just laughed as I was trying to stuff it all in. And he said to me, it looks like you're trying to fit 3 gallons of horse swill into a 1 gallon container, boy, he said to me in his American accent. That's what I think of when I think of United. They've got the lovable Care Bear, Juan Mata.
Yeah.
The juvenile delinquent, Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
They've got Modigliani's Angel Di Maria.
Yeah.
Just for Men's Robin Van Persie.
Yeah.
They've got puberty's Adnan Yanishite.
Yeah.
And they've thrown in Danny Blint and Anders Herrera.
Yeah.
They have to fit all of those.
Well, Falcao, Rog.
They've got beautiful haired Falcao.
I mean,
how do they fit all of
that
in, baby?
That is not going to work with Wayne Rooney.
Well,
Falcao's
hair.
Wayne Rooney's going to look at that and go, why the F did I even bother to get this done? It can never look like that.
It's funny when you talk about El Tigre. I think he'll add two things to United that they need this season, which is a verdant head of hair and some goals. Mm-hmm. But how do you get them all in the same team, David?
Well, they're not. Half those players you mentioned, Juan Mata, where for, where to, where art thou, Juan Mata? Where to for?
Nice guys finish what, David?
I know, 15th in that depth chart. Adnan, you know, is he going to play? I mean, it's just tough to see how he's going to go and put all those pieces together. Having said that, it's a lot of help and it's a lot of quality in a team that still has very good players. People are obsessed with the defence at Man United. And actually, I think that some of those young players have shown actually quite a lot of... I think they've been some of the performers in the games that they've played. It's the offence which isn't ticking, Rog. It's that movement between the lines in midfield and up front which isn't working.
Expect a lot of numbers to be shouted at you by English commentators as United start with their back three but may move to a 4-1-3-2.
Yes.
To try and stuff in as much as that pig swill as possible.
Question number two, Rog. Will the sight of Danny Welbeck in an Arsenal shirt be all Arsenal need to fend off Manchester City? Now, we should say, first of all, this is an interesting transfer This is a red to red transfer. This isn't, we don't have to get used to seeing Danny Welbeck playing blue. He's going from red to red. The red to red transfers, it's a very short history of them. There aren't many of them, Rog, but it's going to be less shocking to the eye.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. He scored 29 goals in 142 appearances for Manchester United.
Yeah.
Though it should be said, many of those were off the bench substitute appearances. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, especially with Olivier Giroud, the beautiful Olivier Giroud, injured. How will Danny Welbeck perform as the man? We've seen how Daniel Sturridge performed as the man when he was given the chance by Liverpool Football Club. Will Danny Welbeck prosper in a similar fashion?
I think, you know, as I was saying, we were talking about England earlier. Look, he's coming to Arsenal at a great time. He's coming off that two-goal performance for England.
You see, the Arsenal moves already liberated the guy.
And I think that what he has, which we have not seen in an Arsenal striker for a long time. I mean, you know, Henri was actually quite a hard player. But Welbeck, his effort, his winning of the ball in midfield, his tackling, how well he challenges. He's agile, Rog. He's almost cat-like in terms of his ability to sort of, you know, take the ball in difficult positions. He's fast. I don't think he's a great passer, but he's fast, and he's a pretty good finisher, and he's got some real skill. I think Arsenal fans are going to fall in love with this guy. I don't think he's a 25-goal-a-season striker. I don't think he's that guy. But I think the Arsenal fans are going to love what they get, and I think that's a great buy, and I think it's a buy that Louis van Gaal and a bunch of Man United fans might really regret.
It's very interesting. I mean, Arsenal are stealthily becoming England's team. Welbeck, Chambers, Wilshere, Gibbs, Ox,
Theo
when
Theo.
He comes back. I mean, Arsenal team off to a very odd slow start. It's going to be a fascinating game against Manchester City. They've had two last-ditch goals, which have kind of steadied the boat a little bit. The highlight of their season thus far has been one of the cleverest and most thoughtful and humorous anti-homophobia advertising campaigns that I cannot commend enough from watching on YouTube. But for Danny Welbeck, I mean, we always talk about my mate Michael Cohen talking about how we're Thierry Henry's team. Oh, we're Cesc Fabregas' team now. Oh, we're Robin Van...
We're Welbeck's team now.
I think the big question as Welbeck's team is how Danny Welbeck will adjust to playing within the nipple-chafing straitjacket that is the Arsenal jersey. Maybe that's all he needs to get his career on the go.
I think it's going to be the white sleeves, Rog, but he's used to wearing the white sleeves with England, so I think he'll be doing okay over there. Question number three is the Premier League's two unbeaten powers clash. Oil-fueled Chelsea and pie-fueled Swansea, Rog. Who will be the last team standing? I've got my mates, Casey and Margaret, are going to London for the first time in their lives, and I've got them tickets to the Chelsea-Swansea game this weekend. Their first ever trip to England. Their first ever Premier League game. They're going to see this game this weekend. I don't think they realise how fortunate they are.
Oh, it's a title decider.
Yeah.
It's the title decider, Dave. Two giants clashing. Yeah. City of London versus the entire country of Wales.
Yeah.
We had a GFOP.
Wales isn't independent yet.
A US serviceman, Andy Burt. Yeah. He said, am I the only one who's noticed that both teams at the top of the Premier League have C at the end of their names?
Wow. Swansea and Chelsea.
He says, I guess Brightling Sea and Saltburn by the Sea have great futures in the sport. Well, Swansea, they've beaten United, Burnley and West Brom. It's their best start in 91 years since we started podding.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting. Can they prove they're for real? Will they be what Southampton were last season? Early pretenders who then fall away. Yeah. They've been scoring freely. Wilfred Bony yet to score. Do you have any fear, though, Davey?
Definitely. I think Swansea are a really good team, and I think they've got lots of attacking options, and they can definitely hurt you. Also, quite a little bit unsure about how Costa's going to come back. Is he injured? Is he not injured? What are his supplies of horse placenta? Like, it's not easy to get hold of a lot of horse placenta, Rog, in London this time of year. So where's he going to be? That little post-international break hangover that sometimes takes place. I'd love to see Chelsea keep a clean sheet in this game. Courtois, as we said before, looks difficult to beat. Yeah, he did come off a game when he conceded three against Everton. Would love to see a clean sheet in this game.
I don't like to be hyperbolic, David, but I do see this as an epic clash between good and evil. With Swansea and the Beowulf.
I'm shocked.
Swansea and the Beowulf kind of role, and Grendel in the Chelsea kind of more villainess role.
I'll remind you of that when Swansea play Everton.
Well, you don't only need to remind me how that book ends. With Beowulf ritually burned on a great pyre in Geatland. And I do believe it's going to end the same for Swansea, sadly.
When football doesn't go your way, Rod, you always have medieval literature. Question number four. Who is the most fascinating arrival we have not yet talked about on the pod?
The player I'm most looking forward to is Esteban Cambiaso.
Yes.
Nicknamed Cucho.
Yeah.
Spanish for old man.
Yeah.
Early in his career, he had the nickname Egg in a Bun.
Yeah. Great nickname. Who hasn't had that nickname?
Why that was the case, and it's because he was an early boulder who tried to conceal his baldness with a terrible, terrible comb over.
Brilliant.
The English newspapers have suggested no human looks more like Britney Spears on that dark weekend that she shaved her head. I think watching him at the King Power Stadium is going to be an absolute delight. They play Stoke this weekend and their merry band of pacey wing trickery. Diouf, Moses, Saeed, Bohan and Jeff Cameron. The Slayers of Manchester
City.
That's going to be a terrific game to watch. Cambiaso is going to be as exotic as Shannon Doherty in that Education Connection infomercial.
Question number five. 3 weeks in cometh the international break. A pause. Time for reflection, Rog. Time to take a second to revisit our appalling predictions for the top four and bottom three that we made at the beginning of the season. And in the spirit of amnesty, see if we want to amend them at all. So let's go over our predictions. Let's start with yours, Rog. You had Chelsea top, City second, Arsenal third, Man United fourth.
I'm going to stick.
This is just the top. You're going to stick.
Yeah.
You're going to stick that. You still think Man United are going to come back and make fourth place?
My word is all I have, Davey. I have to stick with it.
I don't know that I'm going to be sticking.
I think Liverpool are obviously the other contenders, but it's their sock ties that have got me worried, Davey. They look like they've raided Arnold Becker's wardrobe in LA.
Yeah. I had the same teams, and I said it would be three of the following four. Arsenal, champions. Chelsea in second place, Man United in third place, Man City in fourth. I also said I can convince myself of any of those four not making it, and Everton to capitalise if one slipped up. Now, the two teams that that don't make either of our selections, Rog, and other than Swansea, who we should say, are Liverpool and Tottenham, both of whom have had pretty promising starts, certainly in the way that they've played football. Obviously, Liverpool got beaten pretty handily by Manchester City, but other than that, have looked very good. You don't see Liverpool squeaking into the top four. You don't see Tottenham. You don't see Tottenham squeaking
Definitely
into the
not.
Top four. Yeah, I think at this point, I am going to, because evidently I'm not a man of my word, Rog, now that you've put it in those terms. I'm going to take Man United out of the running right now. I'm going to put Liverpool up there, and I'm going to amend my I can convince myself of any of those four not making it, and by saying that the team to make it if one slips up, I'm going to add to Everton. I'm going to put Everton or Tottenham to capitalize if one of those teams slips up. So Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City will make the top four. I still think Arsenal will be champions. Still think Arsenal are going to win it all. I think the Welbeck transfer was superb. I still think they'll beat up the littler teams better than anybody else and ultimately make it, Rog. Relegation. Rog, you picked Southampton, West Brom and Burnley.
Yep. And I misspelt Southampton. I meant to spell it Queen's Park Rangers.
Oh, sorry. So you are a man of your word, but your spelling wasn't very, very good. Okay, and I had Queen's Park Rangers, and I didn't mean Southampton. One of Burnley or Leicester. I'm going to now definitively say Burnley at this point. And I put Villa down, and I feel bad because I've always had a soft spot for Villa. I've been their great supporter and passionate backer, and now they're starting to play some really, really good football. So I don't know. Am I going to amend that? West Brom have had a bad start. No, I'm going to stay with QPR, Burnley. And I think ultimately this season will find Villa out.
Sad, sad comment. Let me just change the mood. September 19th.
Yeah.
In New York City.
Yes.
We're doing a live show.
Oh, can't wait, Rog.
Thank you to all the GFOPs who made it sell out almost within about 90
where
minutes.
Where are we doing it, Rog?
42 West.
Oh, I know where that is.
It's going to be amazing.
Opposite my old tennis.
Night of 1,000 stars. We've got quite a guest list.
Big stars.
Coming together. Mm. I'm not saying they're big, but they're... I cannot wait for it. I cannot wait to be with all the GFOPs who are coming. And I can't wait to be with our Tony Award winning John Johnson.
I ran into him at the tennis last night, Rog. He was at the final.
What's he doing there? He's got a big play about to launch.
I know, a huge play about to launch.
This is our youth.
This is our youth.
Michael Cera and Tavi Gevinson.
Yeah, looks good.
Which I'm going to on Thursday night.
I'm not going to the opening, but I'm going to go at some time soon to go and see that play. Our guest today, Rog, is the author of four novels, including the number one New York Times bestseller and box office sensation, The Fault in Our Stars. Warning, do not watch it on an airplane. He raised a small fortune for the Sarcoma Foundation of America by auctioning off his supports for every game of the World Cup. He's an obsessive EA Sports FIFA player, inventing his own team, the Swindon Town Swoodly Poopers. But as we like to say in real life, and perhaps this has rarely been truer, he is a fan of an even more bonkers club, Liverpool FC. With Mario Balotelli about to make his home debut, we welcome back to the pod the king of the GFOPs, Rog, Mr. John Green.
Hey, boys, how are you?
Well, how are you doing, more importantly? How was your international break, John?
It's been terrible. I mean, England-Switzerland just doesn't do it for me in quite
really?
The same way that Liverpool does.
Right, it's sort of Liverpool versus Switzerland, pretty much
is.
So. Well, fortunately, Henderson's injury was not too serious. You only lost Sturridge during the international break.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hopefully he'll be back for the derby, but we'll see.
Can you recap your summer for us, John? We're watching Uruguay play Italy. Luis Suarez sinks his fangs into human flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you know immediately that the man for whom you've been making all kinds of moral compromises was on his way out of Anfield? How did you feel as both a Liverpool fan and as a human being?
Yeah.
You know, in the moment that it happened, I thought surely my eyes deceived me as he rolled around holding his injured teeth. I felt that it had ended. And I mean, to be honest, in a way I was relieved. You know, I am terrified about this season without Suarez. He is one of the greatest, players I've ever seen. And I think he's underappreciated because he's a bit eccentric, but man, I knew it was over. And I thought to myself, gosh, I hope that he doesn't get banned for so long that we don't get £75 million. And it all worked out perfectly.
No, you definitely got that. And unbelievably, your manager seems to have ended up with Luis Suarez's teeth out of the whole bargain, which is the amazing thing that's happened. So how do you feel about the Liverpool squad? Brendan Rodgers worked very hard again this summer. He had worked hard during the transfer window. So how do you feel about your squad now at Liverpool, John?
Oh, I think that he did the best that he could do. I think it's a much deeper squad, which is important. We're going to be playing more games this season because of the Champions League. But, you know, we'll have to see. It's hard to replace Suarez. I mean, he's a special player, and that's not someone Liverpool can buy because, you know, we're not Real Madrid or Barcelona. So we're going to have to develop those players. We can't find them on the transfer market.
Can you explain Brendan Rodgers to me? I mean, as a character, John. I mean, he's obviously a very talented manager, but he also seems, I don't know how to say this, he also seems increasingly ever more vain.
I think his vanity is about a deep-seated insecurity. I think that you guys have nailed it when you focused on his teeth, because I think he also focuses on his teeth. I think that he has an intense, and this is just my suspicion, an intense obsession with his teeth, and that we're kind of seeing that week by week as they transform and become a bigger and bigger part of his physical body. So that's my personal theory.
We have to also point out that in England, to have teeth like that, like in America, lots of people have teeth that look like that. In England, those are such outlying teeth.
Right.
They look remarkable. In the same way that Americans make joke about how bad English people's teeth are, in England, they make joke about how perfect American people's teeth are.
Right.
So he's walking around with comedy teeth.
But it's not just the teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, the teeth make him look like a trendy vicar, but week to week, he seems like that woman Jocelyn Wildenstein had so much work done that she slowly turned into a lion. He's like slowly morphing week to week into Daniel Craig. I believe he's taking to his doctor a picture of celebrity Liverpool fan Daniel Craig, and he's saying, make it thus, which is Like, I do. I wonder, like, if you could morph into anyone in the world, John, what would you want? Who would you want to look like?
I just want to pause to note what a fantastic James Bond Brendan Rodgers would make.
Yeah.
I think there's only ever been one English James Bond.
Yeah. Has there ever been a Northern Irish James Bond? There's been an Irish
John Green
Brosnan.
Is just the second man in the world who thinks that that's a good idea.
Yeah.
The Brendan Rodgers you made. There's two of you now, Brendan. John Green's on you. Who would you want to be, John, if you could look like anybody in the world?
Oh, I'd want to be significantly younger. Gosh, I don't know. I'd want to be a proper... I don't know. Devo, I guess.
That wouldn't be significantly younger.
No,
I can tell
you.
No,
but then I had a thought. You've got that for a middle-aged gentleman. You have the a bit of the V-shaped torso, which I think is one of the it's the greatest thing a man can have in his 30s or beyond.
I'm working out with a trainer right now. I was telling Rod, I've been kickboxing for the first time. I've never done that before. Do you know what? When I used to sit in the makeup chair or in at the hairdresser, I always used to say, make me look like Vince Vaughn. Now I don't say that anymore.
I always say make me look like Sylvain Distin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or License to Ill era Ad Rock.
Yeah.
Or Bachelor Party era Tom Hanks. Those would be my three.
John Green, take me through the evolution of your feelings and opinion of Raheem Sterling. We are now convinced that he is England's only truly world-class player.
Yeah, I mean, he could be the best player in the world in 3 years.
But 12 months ago, I'm not sure where he was even in Liverpool's planning.
No, you remember being Liverpool. Brendan Rodgers almost sent him home. Or did you not see being Liverpool?
Oh, no, we watched it frame by frame.
David wrote it.
I love being Liverpool. I miss being Liverpool.
It's one of the great programs of our generation.
Yeah.
You know, I am blown away by him. He's the best player on our team, and I can't believe he's 20. I mean, it seems impossible that he's 20, and he's so fast. He's getting so strong, and he just, I mean, that perfectly weighted pass against Switzerland. I confess, I did watch the England Switzerland game. That perfectly weighted pass. It was just gorgeous.
But every run he does, John. Yeah. Every shot, every inch of excessive hair growth that he builds. Do you celebrate, but do you also mourn it a little bit because it brings ever closer, it hastens his inevitable departure to Real Madrid?
It does. I don't want him to get too good. Yeah, I don't know. He just signed a five-year contract. We can't sell him.
Oh, that's so gorgeous that John Green still believes in contracts in football.
No, I do. Look at Luis Suarez. He signed a five-year contract.
I was thinking about this. I'm amazed that you said the Real Madrid thing, because I was thinking about this on the way in. Is Raheem Sterling the kind of player that Real Madrid, Barcelona would be coveting? Is he a shirt seller, Rog? Because you know that's what Real Madrid look for. They look for shirt sellers. Is the Sterling shirt the number one selling shirt on Merseyside? I don't think so. I still think it's Gerrard. I still think people are wearing D Studge more than they're wearing Raheem.
You tell us, John, because Steven Gerrard, don't you call him my beautiful Steven Gerrard?
Yeah, he's the most important person in my life, other than my nuclear family.
I mean, I'm not saying Steven Gerrard's washed up, but he's starting to remind me a little bit of Henry Jones in 3:10 to Yuma. It's like
I'm about to reach through the phone and strangle
him. He almost needs to sacrifice himself to fulfill his greatness. Do you not feel at this point that, you know...
I think he's plenty good enough to be in Liverpool starting 11. I mean, I'm biased, but you know, I think he's plenty good enough. I think he's underappreciated in that defensive midfielder role. I think he does a nice job of distributing the ball. I think we look good in midfield. I thought against Spurs we looked fantastic, and I thought he had a good game. But you know, I get that he's getting old, and I get the jokes, but. You know, I think he'll start for another year, and then I think that he'll have a significant role at the club for 2 years after that, which is perfect because that means he'll win two Premier League titles.
I agree with you. I still think he's got a lot to give. His set piece delivery is still outstanding.
Oh yeah, God, he's still. I mean, the corners, those in swinging free kicks.
Yeah, from the left side of the area, superb stuff. So, fantastic squad, interesting team, charismatic, slightly loopy manager.
Yeah.
And then enter, at the end of the transfer window, Mario Balot... Narrative. Mario Narrativelli, is I think we can call him. I mean, what were your thoughts on hearing that? And what do you think of the man?
I mean, my first thought was narrative. I'd been missing. Look, you know, I'm a novelist. I like plot.
Yes, there's a lot of it. You couldn't write
all
this.
All that sweet, sweet plot that Luis Suarez brought, and Mario Balotelli is just. I mean, he's a plot machine. You know, he could. James Patterson could hang out with him for a couple weeks and get 6 or 7 novels out of it. I was thrilled. I mean, look, I think that he's still very young. I think Brendan Rodgers has shown an ability to get the best out of players who other managers have given up on, even very good managers. And I hope that Balotelli understands that this is kind of his last chance to really develop into a world-class player and that he responds to that. But, do I think he replaces Luis Suarez? I don't. And when I see Daniel Sturridge get injured, my heart definitely sinks. But I'm so psyched. I think it's so fun to have him on the field. Like, he's just the center of attention every single moment of the television broadcast.
And you've also got to say, against Tottenham, certainly it's just one game, but against Tottenham, Balotelli, Sterling, Sturridge, it looked like it worked. It felt, you just gave it that smell test. You thought, oh God, yeah, that looks like it works.
Yeah, no, it was really exciting. I thought he held up the ball really well, and yeah, they looked really good together considering that they, you know, it had only been a week that they'd been training.
One of our listeners at WM Lee wants to know, John Green, if Liverpool finish top of the table, will you write a book with Mario Balotelli in the dual protagonist slash antagonist role?
If Liverpool win the league, I will insert a character named Mario into my new novel, and he will be Mario Balotelli, although he won't
We're
be
breaking news. We're breaking news here. When out of interest, you're fighting battles on two fronts. You're off, personally, I'm sure you're off to Ludogorets Razgrad for the Champions League. That's the number one team, or possibly the number two team in Razgrad. We don't know for sure. But what do you tell yourself is a realistic goal in your highest hopes, John?
You guys know the last time we talked, we were talking about the Europa League, and you were like, you're going to go to the worst cities in Eastern Europe. And then, I mean, I'm sure that it's a lovely town, but Liverpool are going to the third largest city in Bulgaria to play in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I tried to get my wife to book tickets there, but to say that there's no direct flight from Indianapolis is quite the understatement.
You're the number two most popular author in Razgrad, so be very careful what you say.
I love the people of Razgrad. I always have, and I look forward to a sporting contest. But I'm sorry, I forgot the question. What was your question?
Well, you know,
how are we going to do? We're gonna win the league. And now you're going to believe us. Yeah, I really think that we're going to win the league. I was hurt when neither of you picked Liverpool for the top four. And I have to note that your faith in Louis van Gaal may have been slightly misplaced.
When
you listen to this podcast back, we did just revisit our predictions from earlier in the season, and you might feel a little bit better about it.
Good.
Can we talk about proper football clubs?
Yeah.
Because I spent a lot of time on AFC Wimbledon.
Oh, I thought you were going to Chelsea. Anyway, go ahead.
And their website, this is a second tier, League Two side, the fourth tier of English football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the headlines still on AFC Wimbledon's website is author John Green becomes sponsor of AFC Wimbledon. And your quote, beautiful photo of you, you say, John, AFC Wimbledon is a truly extraordinary football club. Basically, they're the best football team in the world. Fill us in. What is going on? Two-timer. But go on, John. Tell us what's going on.
I sponsor AFC Wimbledon. Yeah, this team in the fourth tier that's owned by its fans and was started in the wake of the team in Milton Keynes moving there and Wimbledon losing its club. It's an amazing story. They progressed through the non-league ranks in under 10 years, and now they're a league team, and they're awesome people. And so the proceeds from my FIFA playing on YouTube go to sponsor AFC Wimbledon. And this year, the Nerdfighter community's phrase, "Don't forget to be awesome," is on their butts. We sponsor their butts, and it's very exciting.
It says on the back of their shorts, it says,
yeah,
DFTBA.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. It's one of the greatest things I've heard in football this week, John.
Don't forget to be awesome. We've got to hand it to the sign-off at the end, Rog. It's so good. Except John might charge us.
Yep. Well, you just have to pay AFC Wimbledon.
John, I feel terrible because I've never read The Fault in Our Stars. I've never read the book. And I've been, believe me, I've had some arguments about it. It's been given to me by significant people in my life and I haven't read it and I've been in a lot of trouble for that. But I, coming back from LA just last week, I watched the movie on the plane. It's dangerous to watch a film on a plane, that lack of oxygen. I've never made it through the first 20 minutes of The Blind Side. The second that Big Mike walks on the screen, I'm like gone, in tears, in floods. I literally cried for 2 hours straight watching this movie. I'm not embarrassed to say it. It is moving. It is brilliant. Right now, they should just give an Academy Award to Shailene Woodley, and I think you get an Academy Award as well. If I've got anything to do with it, you will. Fantastic film. How was it seeing your book turned into the big screen?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, it was really a dream experience. Usually authors have these horror stories of watching the movies get made, but I was on set almost every day, and I became very close to Shailene and the other stars of the movie, and it's just a really special experience. They did a great job. I mean, I cried through the whole movie, too, and... Oh. I just feel really lucky. I kind of won the author lottery on that one.
Yeah, so, so good.
Question from GFOP Benson. If Augustus Waters had to choose a soccer team, who would it be?
Brilliant, brilliant question.
I mean, I fear that Augustus is a bit of a glory chaser, so he might be a Chelsea supporter.
Oh, thank you. I would take Augustus as a Chelsea supporter.
By the way, the second line of Benson's email was, I'd like to think he'd choose a small team nobody followed, like Crystal Palace.
No, it's pure Chelsea. I love it. I'll take Augustus.
Final question for me, from one of our listeners, at Phil Sock8 wants to know, John Green, how can I get my daughter to stop obsessing over your books and movie and focus on more important things like soccer?
That's a great question, and it's an important one because it is time for her to move on from reading, which is an idle pursuit, and focus on something important like football. I think that you have to introduce her to the narrative, and that means introducing her to Mario Balotelli.
Wow, that is super narrative. John, last for me, so give me your Premier League predictions. First, second, third, fourth.
Oh, I mean, I genuinely think we're going to win the league. I know it's insane. I think Chelsea look to be the best team in the Premier League right now. So I'd say they're going to finish second.
That was wonderful. That was Liverpudlian logic. Well done. Go ahead.
That's genuinely the way I think, though. Arsenal third, Everton stunned the world and finished fourth.
Wow, suck up. That's really good. John Green, such a joy to have you on the pod. We got our TV show, the Men in Blazers show, starting in a couple of weeks. We can't wait to have you on that, to actually meet you in person. John Green.
You've got You've got a couple of weeks to get your teeth fixed.
Yeah, exactly. We owe all of this, we should say, to our great friend Grace Helbig, who put John Green and us together, who connected us initially. So thanks so much, Grace. Thanks so much, John, for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Godspeed.
Courage.
What a man.
What a bloke for a Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of admiration for him.
Yeah, he is properly... Do you know what I love about him is that what he really gets about Premier League football is he is proper insane and loopy and contradictory and self-aware of how lunatic the whole thing is.
But the fact that you cried during this movie.
Oh, I'm not embarrassed to say I cried during the
movie. No, I was going to say, I cried during 30 going on 30 on the plane. You're crying at everything. It doesn't mean a huge amount.
Oh, my God.
I looked at why it is. Science has not
quite worked out.
This
film is really good, though, I would say.
Science has not worked out why so many people cry on planes.
Yeah.
I read a paper about it. It's partially...
Is this also from the University of East Lancashire?
No, this is from an American place, so it's got to be right. Evergreen, I think.
Yeah.
Evergreen State. Heightened sense of separation.
Yeah.
Anxiety. Vulnerability. Uh-huh. You are alone. Cut off from communication in a world where you so rarely are. That's why you cry.
I feel like you just... now they have like go-go on the plane, but I do feel like you just climbed inside my soul. Okay, Rog, the Ravens. Here we go. From Paul Adams at Men in Blazers. Have you ever considered what your lives would be like without soccer? What kind of jobs would you have? I like to imagine Dave Oh as a motivational speaker and Rog as a mime for children's birthday parties. Or maybe Rebecca Luer's butler. Or maybe Mike Tirico's shoe shiner. Oh my God. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Go Toffees, size the day at PD Adams.
Oh, what a timely question, because I thought a lot this weekend what life would be like without soccer.
Uh-huh.
Barren. Devoid of human emotion. I'd be numb to other humans and unable to socialise. I'd just retreat into myself and inevitably be a hermit in the woods.
What other jobs have you had, Rog?
The question I've got, is he asking us what would we like to be with our skill sets that we have, or if we could be anything in the world? Because those are two different questions.
Well, what...
If I could be anything.
Yeah, okay.
Anything.
Yeah.
I'd be a world-class central defender for Everton Football Club.
Yeah.
I'd be Roger Taylor. Yeah. The drummer in Duran Duran at the peak of their fame. I thought that'd be an amazing way to see the world. Or I'd be a Nazi hunter like Simon Wiesentalt.
Do you know, the only way I can think of answering this question, because I can't really imagine a world without football. The only world without football... And remember, I do have a second job. I do produce TV shows. So I'd have to imagine a world where television and, as we know it, and football as we know it, didn't really exist.
Well, the first one's happening.
So I'd go, yeah, it's true. I would go to a... So I have to think about a post-apocalyptic world. And I do this a lot with my friends, is we talk about... It's something we talk a lot about on the golf course, is what would our post-apocalyptic careers be?
I know what mine would be.
What would your post-apocalyptic career
stay
be?
Stay-at-home dad.
A stay-at-home dad. That's a terrible post-apocalyptic career.
I'd love to be a stay-at-home
What
dad.
Would Mrs. B be doing in a post-apocalyptic world?
Really a massive global corporation. Probably.
Anyway, so I've got two things that I've often thought that I've sort of claimed as my post-apocalyptic jobs. Nightclub impresario. I would run a hell of a nightclub.
The Men in Blazers bar that we're
Yeah, starting. Not everything that we do at the nightclub would be totally legal by today's legal moral standards. But in a post-apocalyptic world, it would be wonderful. And secondly, I would be the world's foremost robot tracker. I would be the person you'd come to go and hunt down your robots. And some of you might say, what skills do you have to be a great robot tracker? Evidently, I don't have them. You need engineers. You need, like, computer programmers. You need the people who build robots to figure out how to go, and you need hair to go and figure out how to find them. But if I run the greatest nightclub in the world and I give free admission VIP tables and services to those young engineers and computer programmers.
Or to droid, you could lure them in.
No, just nerds. Just nerds. Oh, yeah, exactly. The robots might love it in there. It's like the bar in Star Trek. I can combine my great nightclub in a post-apocalyptic world. It's a place where every engineer, programmer, android wants to be. I'd track every robot. That's how I make a billion. That's how I become the Roman Abramovich of the post-apocalyptic world.
I'd be hunting Nazis. You'd be tracking robots. In a post-apocalyptic world, I would probably be, in seriousness, I'd probably be either a poet, an urban planner, or a life model. One of those three.
Your idea of a post-apocalyptic world is very different from my idea of
we
a post-apocalyptic
need poetry,
world.
David.
Yeah, it's so true. Okay, the winner. We're talking of poetry, Rog. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven O' the Week is Mark Cole. My God, one of our oldest friends on the Twitter, Mark Cole, Black Bile. Having now heard Rog on the pod for 5 years, I finally have to ask, why does he never pepper every sentence with "eh" or "like," as all Liverpudlians do when they call 606 or Talk Support? Was it caned out of him in boarding school in between sessions of the Liverpool Breaking Crew? Did he drop it when he moved to Chicago in hopes of meeting Dana Plato or William Perry? Or did Davo pull a Henry Higgins and teach Roger Doolittle the King's English in a panic room at Embassy Row? Inquiring minds want to know. Yeah, you don't have much of a Liverpudlian accent. A little bit.
We should describe to Americans, Liverpool is a wonderful city.
Do your Liverpool accent.
Liverpool's an amazing city. It's got its own culture.
Yeah.
Its own language. Yeah. Scouse.
Yeah.
If Scotland votes yes, I can imagine Liverpool going up next and saying it's going to become a socialist republic. It's its own culture. Absolutely an amazing place. I went to Liverpool College. Yeah. My dad is a judge.
Yeah.
I'd say... When I meet Liverpudlians, they're always like, you don't sound like you're from Liverpool, lad.
Yeah, we met those Liverpudlians in Brazil who said that to
us. He's a very proper man, my dad. Yeah. And so in school, I lived a double life. On the schoolyard, you'd like be going up to people like, hey, you're looking at me or you're chewing a brick? Because either way, you're going to lose your teeth. Like full on fronting it. And then my mother would beep the horn. to pick me up and be like, excuse me, mother, hello. And you kind of flip without knowing it between one and the other. But my dad, I did used to say like in my accent. Like, can you explain like to Americans?
Well,
it's like you know in American speak, isn't it?
Well, Americans say like a lot.
They do.
Yeah.
Well, the two things I said, right and like, in between sentences, I'd be like, all right, dad, then right. I was playing right. And my dad would not look over his newspaper. He'd just say, each time I said right, he'd just say, left, Roger, left.
That's not something your father said a lot of the time, if I understand his political persuasion.
Hundreds of times he said it until I just stopped saying it. And the same with like, which I also used to say. Or you know, was something I used to say in between sentences. He'd be like, no, Roger, I don't know. That's why you're telling me this story.
I'm not sure.
So I was cured, not by Davo, but by Judge Jarber
Bennett. I wonder if this completely exists in America. I mean, I have met people from, you know, my eldest daughter who grew up in the South, ended up with not a Southern accent out of her own determination to have an unplaceable standard American accent. But what we're talking about is you do it in order to sort of have some sort of street credibility within on the schoolyard.
Yeah, like...
And the same for me, in South East London, Rog. I mean, everybody spoke like that. So I'd be like, yeah, anyway, yeah, later. See you later. Hi, mummy. Where are we going tonight? What are we going to go and do? Yeah, right there.
Without even thinking about it,
I mean, the accent in South East London, it's right there. It's right there, right in the back of your nose, right there.
We should do a pod where we just do...
We just speak there.
Schoolyard pod. Schoolyard conversations.
Yeah, love it. Well, thanks. Great question, Mark Cole. Really enjoyed that. Okay, Rog, your weekend looks like this.
Oh, thank
God. Let me paint
God.
A picture. Saturday morning, 7:45 a.m., Arsenal versus Manchester City.
Oh, thank God it's so early, David.
Saturday, 10 a.m., Chelsea versus Swansea. As you said, evil versus good, Rog. On Sunday at 11 a.m., Manchester United versus QPR.
Rio Ferdinand's return.
Yeah, all of these on NBC Sports Network, their family of networks, Rog. All the games on Extra Time. That's a wonderful product. On Sunday, Rog, it's the California Clásico. San Jose Earthquakes versus the Los Angeles Galaxy. That's Sunday at 3 p.m. Many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go to Amazon for items, big or small, just click on the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Roger?
Just read there's a new Philip Larkin biography arrived on my desk.
Yeah.
Philip Larkin, Life, Art and Love by James Booth.
Yeah.
How many books do you get to read about a, quote, death-fixated porn addict who wrote to his mother twice a week for over 25 years?
Wow.
It's my kind of book.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to put in our guest book, Rog, The Fault in Our Stars, and I'm going to pledge to read that book after seeing that exceptional motion picture, Fault in Our Stars by GFOP, John Green. Read it. It's meant to be incredible. If it's halfway as good as the movie, it's going to be worth every second.
It's halfway as good as his interview.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Second way to connect to us, our newsletter, The Raven. It's fueled by Guinness, Rog. It collates the best ravens, our own writing on a weekly basis. Sign up via meninblazers.com. We will both post what we're reading, listening to, or watching. Also, new listeners, please download on iTunes and Amazon our best of album. Still, Rod, soaring up the Billboard comedy charts. It needs to go higher than number one. Men in Blazers, Unbuttoned. Now, that's what I call suboptimal. And also, click on our wonderful, independently GFOP-maintained wiki spaces, meninblazers.wikispaces.com, a wonder of the modern world. You can connect to us, as always, through meninblazers.com, on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, on Instagram, Men in Blazers. Like us on Facebook. Email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Matombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size the day.
Is that your analysis?
No sleep till Moscow.
Stay in charge.
Kung fu fight in America.
Oh, love you, Rog.
Love you, Davey.